Welcome to Story 49 on KNOM Radio. Story 49 is a monthly show featuring the stories of people who live in Western Alaska. I'm your host, Emily Benick. This month, I talked to Marjorie Tabone about her experiences studying abroad in Canada, winning Miss Indian World, and her decision to get a facial tattoo. Marjorie Tabone is 24 years old. She's originally from Cape Nome, Alaska. Her mother is Inupiaq, and her mother's family is originally from Wales. Her father is a member of the Kiowa Nation. Her parents met at a powwow while her mother was attending school in Albuquerque, and they both moved back to Nome after her mother completed school. Marjorie identifies with both sides of her heritage, although she was raised in Western Alaska in Inupiaq cultural and subsistence traditions.
My name is Marjorie Tabone. I'm from Nome, Alaska. I'm 24 years old, and I am part Inupiaq and Kiowa Indian. Growing up, we lived out at Cape Nome, and we lived out there for the summer and parts of fall, right before snow came. And we would do a lot of subsistence, like pick berries, go fishing, and get eggs in the springtime, and harvest those for the winter, and take care of seals, so we had plenty of seal oil in the wintertime. So those are the things that we engaged in and that we still continue to engage in to this day.
Marjorie carefully balanced her subsistence lifestyle with schoolwork. She was a dedicated student and went above and beyond her coursework. In high school, she traveled to compete on several sports teams and was elected class president.
I just loved school, so I always knew I would go to college and I would finish.
Marjorie recently graduated from the University of Alaska Fairbanks with a degree in Alaska Native Studies. In continuation of her high school activism, she decided to take her learning at the university outside of the classroom. While studying at UAF in 2009, Marjorie spent two semesters in Canada. She traveled to Iqaluit in Nunavut, Canada, to better learn the Inupiaq language. Her study abroad experience in Canada was more important to her than she ever thought it would be, and was a major influence in her decisions over the next several years.
When I was going to school in Fairbanks, it was the first time I ever had the opportunity to take an Inupiaq language course. So while I was going to school at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, I took Inupiaq language for maybe about 4 or 5 semesters, and I decided that I wasn't going to learn how to speak Inupiaq just taking the lessons. And so I knew that over in Canada, I had a couple friends from there, and they spoke fluent Inuktitut, which is like a different dialect of Inupiaq. But it was something that I thought was similar enough that if I went over there, I could learn it, because they speak Inuktitut there normally. That's their first language. And so I decided to study abroad over in a place called Iqaluit, which is in Nunavut, which is a new territory over there that was developed in 1999. Iqaluit means lots of fish, and that's what it means for us too. So Iqaluk is one fish, and Iqaluit is many fish. I had a couple of roommates over there, and they spoke fluent Inuktitut. And there's this guy who came in, this non-native, he came in and he says, "How can you say in Inuktitut, welcome to beautiful Iqaluit?" And then my friend, she said, "That doesn't make any sense in Inuktitut." And he's like, "What?" And he's like, "It's like you're saying, welcome to beautiful lots of fish, and it doesn't make any sense." And I just cracked up super bad, because, I mean, in English, it would make sense if you said it. But in Inuktitut, it doesn't make any sense. What I learned, too, about Inupiaq, translation doesn't always work when you're translating from a different language.
Marjorie not only improved her understanding of the Inupiaq language, she learned to communicate in Inuktitut.
That experience over there was so amazing. I met so many great people. I had several mentors. One of the mentors couldn't speak English, and so we did a lot of sign language and pointing, and she would speak in Inuktitut to me, and eventually I started to understand what she was saying, which was a really great moment when I was there, because I remember the moment that I understood what she said when we were trying to sew a parkie together. And that was one of the most memorable moments, was when she was trying to tell me how to sew my parkie because I was doing it wrong. And she was scolding me, and I knew she was scolding me, but it was like, it was a loving way. She did it in a very loving way.
So what was the most surprising thing about Iqaluit? What didn't Marjorie expect when she went there?
If you look on a map, Iqaluit is the same latitude as Nome, pretty much. So the environment was the same, like the weather, the coldness, the land was very similar. They had the same plants as us. But what really surprised me was how traditional they really were. Even my peers, they were saying that they were born in igloos. They were born in a sod house. And they lived out on the land until they were, 10 or 12 before they moved into the city. When the missionaries came and converted them and the government tried to identify them, give them names, they gave them, they call them dog tag numbers. They tattooed them with branding numbers to identify who they were. And some of my classmates had those numbers on their arms. I felt like I was kind of going back in time into a place where they were still really struggling with assimilation. So that was something that was really surprising.
Despite these differences, Marjorie found a lot to enjoy in Iqaluit.
One of the things that I loved, oh my gosh, is they have this whale called a narwhal, and it's like the unicorn of the sea. It was so good. It's kind of like beluga, but it's sweeter. And so that was one of my favorite things, too, is trying their food. I also got to try, they called it the Bible. It's like the inside of a caribou stomach, and they just roll it up into like a roll of, I guess, stomach, and they freeze it raw, and then they cut it up, and you just eat it raw with some caribou meat raw. Tutukwak, they call it. And it was really gritty, and it kind of had like a flavor of like plants and kind of dirt, but it was really good, and I really enjoyed eating that with them. Another thing that I really enjoyed was my peers. They would always make fun of me, the way I talked, my accent. They'd always introduce me to like elders, like, oh, she's American. They didn't have any problem teasing me, which I thought was great because that's something that I grew up with, knowing about teasing and that value of humor and humility. So that was really great over there because we share the same values. I learned so much more than I thought I would.
Marjorie plans to return to Nunavut to get her degree in fur production and design. After she returned from Iqaluit, Marjorie decided to enter the Miss Arctic Native Brotherhood, or Miss A&B pageant in Nome, as a kind of capstone for her study abroad experience. The Miss A&B pageant is a cultural pageant held in Nome, in which contestants are judged on demonstrations of their cultural knowledge. Marjorie wanted to demonstrate how much she had learned in Canada. And she won the Miss Arctic Native Brotherhood pageant in 2010. This victory set her on course to enter the Miss World Eskimo Indian Olympics and Miss Indian World pageants.
As part of my obligations as Miss Arctic Native Brotherhood, I had to run for Miss World Eskimo Indian Olympics, Miss WIO. It's a cultural pageant, so it's not a beauty pageant like Miss America. It's something where your points are tallied on your cultural knowledge, the way you hold yourself as a Native person and your identity and your role model and your basic ideas of a platform of your goals in life and how you feel about issues relating to our Native people. We were judged on a personal interview with a panel of judges. We were also judged on a impromptu speech on a question that was given to us, as well as a talent that we had to present. One of the things that I decided to do as my talent is that since I had just recently got back from Iqaluit in Canada, to do my talent in the things that I learned over there. So I did throat singing, juggling, and I sang a song that I learned over there. And so it was really cool because Philip Blanchett, he's one of the singers in Bamua. I knew he had done throat singing before. And so I said, hey, I'm doing throat singing for my talent. Could you throat sing with me? And we totally just impromptu throat sang in front of everybody. And it was so much fun. And he's like so much taller than me. So he really had to bend down. And because I'm really short, I had to tippy toe. And it was just so much fun. And everyone was having a good time and laughing. And I won Miss WIO. I've always wanted to be Miss WIO, so it was such a huge honor to win. As part of my obligations as Miss WIO, another thing I had to do was run for Miss Indian World at the Gathering of Nations powwow in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
The Miss Indian World pageant is a much larger pageant than the Miss A&B and the Miss World Eskimo Olympics pageants. It's held at the Gathering of Nations in Albuquerque every year in April. According to the Gathering of Nations website, the Miss Indian World pageant is the largest and most prestigious cultural pageant for young Native women. Marjorie represented both the Inupiaq and the Kiowa peoples.
This young lady who wins the Miss Indian World pageant will represent over 500 nations throughout North America. And what they do is they embody their culture and present to different conferences, meetings, presentations at schools. And they also attend powwows to represent all of the cultures. And so this young woman is symbolic representation of all of the cultures uniting as one and representing them as a positive young female role model. When I was preparing for Miss Indian World, you have to have a talent as well. And I was demonstrating something that I learned from a different culture when I had done throat singing and juggling and singing their songs. And so I decided to change my talent over to something that I had passion for, and I decided to do Native games. And so for my talent as Miss Indian World, I did the 1 foot high kick and the one arm reach. And I only did two because you're only allowed 3 minutes to do your talent presentation. So I did the 1 foot high kick first. And the 1 foot high kick is a game that involves a ball that's suspended from the ceiling generally. What the competitor has to do is they approach the ball at any rate. They have to jump up with both feet, kick the ball with one foot, and then land on the ground with the same foot you kicked the ball with, and maintain balance so you can't fall over or stumble or anything. After that, I demonstrated the one-arm reach, which is a game that involves a lot of strength and balance. So again, you use a suspended ball up in the air. I put it up about 4 feet. What you have to do as a competitor is you have to balance your entire body on one arm. You have to support your body. You could put your elbow on your pelvis and you have your hand on the ground and you kind of use your legs and your upper body to balance your body out, and you use the other hand to reach up and touch the ball and then maintain balance and then land without touching any other part of your body on the ground except the hand you're balancing with and the hand you're reaching up with the ball with. Everyone was so amazed at what people do up here for games, you know, being able to share a little bit of Alaska, its unique history and its unique games that we have up here that we usually play in the long winter months. So that was a lot of fun.
Marjorie not only had to demonstrate the games at the Miss Indian World pageant, she also had to explain their cultural relevance to a panel of judges.
A lot of these games, as unique as they are, pose a super strong purpose of survival. And the 1 foot high kick, for example, is a game that involves agility, flexibility, and strength and body control, as well as one arm reach. And what I hear, the reason why they did the 1 foot high kick is that they did it as a signal. So let's say, for example, there's a hunting party out on the ice and they are successful with a hunt. They would send a messenger to run back to the village. They would run to the closest hill that would be seen by the entire village, and they would run up this hill and they would do a signal kick, and someone would be watching from the village. And depending on what kick it would be, they would determine that they, the hunters, would have either a successful hunt or an unsuccessful hunt. And from what I hear, the 1 foot high kick signified that there was a successful hunt, and the 2 foot high kick signified that it was unsuccessful. The one-arm reach is strictly a game to develop your skills in strength, balance, and body control. And that was developed because, let's say, for example, you're out on the ice and you're hunting for something, and then all of a sudden the ice starts to break and it's shifting and it's cracking and it's moving extremely fast. You do not want to be caught out there and become disoriented and start struggling and not having control of your body. It's very dangerous out there. And so this game teaches you to have control of your body so that if that ever happens, you're able to maintain yourself and then get out of that sticky situation. So all of those games have purpose. There's a reason why we did them. We still do these games because people still go out hunting. People still use these skills to be able to survive. And even though it was developed thousands of years ago, these games, we still need them today because we still have a strong subsistence culture here.
Marjorie's demonstration and explanation of the Inupiaq games impressed the Miss Indian World judges. She won the talent portion of the competition. There were still several competitions to go, though, including a dance competition.
You're rated on a point system by different judges. And so you have to do a talent for the Miss Indian World pageant, prepare an essay, be judged on a personal interview with a panel of judges, impromptu speech to a question, and you're judged on your dancing. You have to do your style of dance to powwow music. And if you've ever heard powwow music, you know that it's really fast. And if you know Inupiaq dancing, it's really slow. So I was dancing double time. It was lots of fun, though.
Marjorie remembers the last day of the Miss Indian World competition clearly.
I remember that last day when we were about to do the coronation, I was talking to Mom. I said, okay, Mom, if I win, they said that the family needs to go down to the arena and dance behind the new Miss Indian World, if that's your family member. And then my mom said, the moment that I said that, and she knew that I had won. The coronation, it happened. I'd won Most Talented, and other girls won different awards, and they were doing the announcing of the Miss Indian World, and they have second runner-up, first runner-up, and then they did the new Miss Indian World representing the Inupiaq and Kiowa Nation, Margie Tallbone, and I was like, oh, that's me, oh my God. It was like a truly epic moment that I represented over 500 nations in North America, and my family came down. I had all of people who are from Alaska felt compelled to go down and dance behind me. It was like this whole group of people who supported me and were there for me right behind me. And that was such a touching moment for me. I had to have 4 bodyguards around me at all times because everyone would crowd and pull at me because they wanted to talk to me or take pictures with them or get autographs. And that was such a different experience, you know, getting questions and pictures with so many people. I had never smiled so much in my entire life. My cheeks were sore the next day. It was one of the best experiences of my life.
Marjorie, usually bubbly and outspoken, gets almost reverent as she describes the love she felt from her home community in Alaska when she won Miss Indian World.
I was so supported by my community. They organized a potluck for me to honor me winning Miss Indian World, for honoring me and my family for the accomplishment that we did together. And that was so heartwarming and just made me want to live here forever and give back.
Marjorie gives back to her community by acting as a role model and by speaking to communities around the world.
As Miss Indian World, your duties are to be a positive role model to everyone throughout all of the nations. I was able to travel to places in Canada and the lower 48. I even made it as far as New Zealand and was able to represent not only my community, but also the entire North America population of Indigenous people. And I don't think I would have been able to do it without the support of my family and the support of my community. And I definitely had both of them, which I'm so fortunate of and still get kind of emotional about it.
So how does Marjorie act as a role model?
As a role model, I like to encourage the youth to kind of step out of their comfort zone because that's the reason why I decided to go to college and decided to run for Miss Arctic Native Brotherhood and Miss WIO and Miss Indian World is because I was afraid to step out of my comfort zone, but I did it. And because I did, I was able to see and grow and get knowledge that I would not have otherwise gotten if I had just stayed in Nome. It'll always be a positive experience because you'll learn something. You'll get stronger and you'll be able to do things that you would not have done otherwise. And so that's what I always did to talk to the youth. That's how I would be a positive role model. And I would also try to talk about doing games. I would do a lot of Native game demonstrations and talk about some of the negative stereotypes of a Native person, an Indigenous person. Just try and be a strong person for the youth that need that person. It would be kind of the same thing when I talk to adults because I would talk to large audiences. So I'd kind of have a broader topic relating to cultural identity and not being afraid of who you are. And you can decide what you want to do. You don't have to always wear that kusbuk when you go to an event. You know, you don't have to wear mukluks to be Native. It's not about what you wear. It's about how you feel in your heart and how you feel you are to yourself.
After she completed her official duties as Miss Indian World, and graduated from the University of Alaska Fairbanks, Marjorie decided to get a traditional Inupiaq chin tattoo.
I graduated this last spring, and I thought that it was appropriate that I get a traditional chin tattoo after I graduated college. Because long time ago, when the young woman of where my ancestry comes from Wales, the young woman, when they became of marriageable age, is given that responsibility of, okay, now you are ready to have your own family, and you're ready to give back to your community. And so they were given the tattoos on the chin to symbolize that. And so translating that into modern setting, now it's not so appropriate to get married when you're 13 or 14. I decided that it was appropriate to get the chin tattoos after I got my college degree, when I could become independent and give back to my community and be able to provide for a family.
Marjorie's decision to get a chin tattoo was not impulsive. She thought out her design very carefully. This tattoo ties her to her Inupiaq heritage, and she had to consider every element of the tattoo.
Throughout Inuit territory, and the Inuit territory goes, it's all over circumpolar north, pretty much. Canada, Greenland, Russia, they all have some form of tattoos over there in all those places. Chin tattoos, face tattoos, hand, wrist, arm. All kinds of tattoos. Different styles of tattoos come with that too. And within Alaska, there's several different ways to do styles for tattoos. And since there's several different styles for tattoos, there's different ways of deciding what I wanted to do for my tattoos. Because in the northern region, in Barrow and ASRC area, they have a certain style of tattoo that involves dots and lines. And I've seen several that is like one solid line in the middle and dots on the side. I've seen three lines in the middle with more dots on the side. I've seen just one solid line up in the northern area. And in the Yupik area, they also have chin tattoos as well. One solid line I've seen. In the Bering Strait area, there's several different ways and styles that is done for chin tattoos. At first, I was going to do a northern style because that's where I learned in Inupiaq. I learned a lot of my Inupiaq for Barrow dialect. I have a Barrow dialect Inupiaq accent, which is funny because my grandmother, she's from Wales and she speaks in the Wales dialect, and she always corrects me because she says I'm saying it wrong, and I says it's a Barrow dialect. Anyways, pretty funny. So I decided that I think I'm going to have the traditional tattoo in the Wales style for young women. And the Wales style, the one that I learned from my grandmother and from listening to relatives and reading in books and doing research, is that they have one thick line down the center of the chin and two thin lines next to it. And that's the initial tattoo. So the young lady would get this initial tattoo of three lines to signify that they're of marriageable age and ready to have a family and contribute to the community. And then as they get older, they have kids, they have grandkids, they would get more lines or get more tattoos. And so I decided to go with that style.
The style of the tattoo was not the only thing that Marjorie had to consider, however. She also had to decide who would do her tattoo and with what materials.
Traditionally, a long time ago, they would use soot and sinew and a needle to make the tattoos. So they would mix the soot with either seal oil or urine or spit, and they would rub the sinew through that so it's covered in that mixture of soot and that liquid, and they would pierce through your skin through this needle. And they would just run the string through your chin until you got a line. And they would continually do that, and it'd be a long process, repetitive process of putting the soot on the string and then sewing it through your skin and doing it until you got the line. So that was one method of doing it. There's another method too that involved the needles and just poking the ink in there that I've seen or heard that they did. So I was thinking about doing that and having my family members do a stitch or help out a little bit so they could all be involved with the process, because I had the support of my family to do the tattoo. And I talked to my mom, I talked to my grandma, and we all decided that a long time ago, they always had the professionals do it, the women who had done them before, the women who knew how to do it properly. And so we agreed that I would get it done by a professional. So I went to a tattoo parlor and I got it done by a professional tattoo artist who had done traditional tattoos before on other young ladies. So I got it done there, and I decided to do it like a blue color because it would be more symbolic of soot, I guess you could say. So I decided to do that, and I love my chin tattoo.
So how does Marjorie's chin tattoo affect her daily life?
When I first got my chin tattoo in May, and, you know, it was an experience that you'll never forget. It did hurt. It hurt to get the chin tattoo, but it was a good hurt, I guess you could say. It was a good painful. But it's an experience that kind of changed my worldview and my mindset for, like, women, young, strong women, because for the first week that I got my chin tattoo, I would see young women, and I would just see a chin tattoo on them. Like, even though they didn't have a tattoo, I would see that they would be so pretty with a chin tattoo. All women should get a chin tattoo because it looks so beautiful on them. And so it was just an amazing moment when I got the chin tattoo of realizing that we have such a beautiful culture, and these tattoos are not just symbolic of my culture and my identity. It makes me feel like a strong woman that has a strong family and the support system. And Every woman should get a chin tattoo because it looks so pretty on them.
Marjorie's chin tattoo drew her closer to her family.
That was a really great experience because I had my whole family was there supporting me the whole time. And it was a group decision. You know, it wasn't just me wanting to get it. It was my whole family because I wanted to get it for a long time, but it was never the right time. So it was just perfect timing, and I had the support I needed. I still have the support now.
Marjorie's traditional chin tattoo also helps her express her identity and lets her continue to be a positive role model.
My whole heart is Inupiaq. Having these chin tattoos kind of represent me being a strong Inupiaq woman, a role model, being a person who can be independent and work for my family, work for my community, and also means that I'm from this area. This is where my roots are. This is where I will always be. That's one of the things that I do to maintain being a positive role model, is knowing who I am, being strong in my cultural identity, since I have multiple identities, right? I have Inupiaq background and Kiowa background, and I acknowledge them both. But I live by the Inupiaq values that I grew up with.
Marjorie remains strong in her Inupiaq cultural heritage. She also looks towards the future.
We're in a shifting world. Our cultures are always changing. They've never, ever stayed the same. If they stayed the same, they wouldn't survive. They'd always have to adapt to change, to weather, to the climate. And we have to do the same thing with our cultural knowledge, our identity, how we see ourselves, and how we interact with other people. That always changes. And that's one of the things that I really try to do with the youth, and show that even though my heart is Inupiaq, even though I still put on my dancing shoes and I go dance with some boogie, boogie, boogie dancing, you know, and I'm still native. That's just who I am. I'm adapting to change. I still go to education where I sit in classrooms, and even though it's unnatural to sit for 8 hours and just listen and kind of not part of our culture, I still do it because that's how we get our education now. That's how we get that special piece of paper that says I have a degree in knowledge in this particular topic. And so even though I do that Western style of schooling and education, I'm still native. I'm still Inupiaq.
A huge thank you to Marjorie Tabone for coming into the KNOM studios to talk about her study abroad experience, winning Miss Indian World, and her continual role as a leader and role model. Marjorie lives in Nome, Alaska, and works as the wellness coordinator for Kowarik. She coaches the Nome Native Youth Olympics in her spare time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Story 49 is a production of KNOM Radio Mission. The music for this episode was provided by Mystery Mammal. If you would like to participate in Story 49, please call KNOM at 907-443-5221 or email story49@knom.org. Story 49, sharing your voice, your story, your Alaska.